Now we're going to talk about pork. But no, it's not Food Friday yet. Still Thursday. Tomorrow, we are going to talk about Hmong cuisine, so get hungry for that. But now we're going to take a look at pork barrel spending, also known as governmentally directed spending, also known as earmarks. Where'd they come from? Where'd they go? And could they come back and make Congress more productive? Our next guest thinks there's at least a possibility. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think government earmarks were a good idea? Do you want to see them come back or stay gone? Do you have a question about what they are, how they work, and how they could be made to work better? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Don Kettle is the Sid Richardson Professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin, where he focuses on public management and policy. He's a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and previously taught political science at UW-Madison. Don, welcome back to the show.
Rob, it's great to be with you and always great to be back in Wisconsin.
Good to have you back. Now, start us off with a basic definition. When we say earmarks, what are we talking about?
Earmarks, and the definition is a little sloppy, but essentially means that it is a bit of legislation that earmarks or focuses in particular a bit of federal spending for a particular congressional district for a particular project. So, for example, there may be an earmark to include a new $1.3 trillion program for $1.3 million program for, say, a new bridge in Milwaukee or an expansion of an interstate highway going through the center of the state. Those would be earmarks, and they'd be identified specifically in the legislation as part of the process of getting it passed. So the idea is to try to use that to build political support. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah, talk about the early days of earmarks. When did they come about in U.S. government?
There have been earmarks or pork barrel politics for as long as there has been American government. There's actually a great story from Thomas Jefferson, who condemned the fact that early Congresses were putting the kind of extra spending into pieces of legislation, and he criticized it for talking about the spending of money on post roads, including roads to deliver the mail, as he called a bottomless abyss of public money. And Andrew Jackson battled against them as well, but we've never succeeded in getting rid of them, and it's one of those things where some people are beginning to wonder whether or not we should.
Well, and we did sort of get rid of them, right? A Republican majority in Congress put an end to the practice, or at least a version of the practice. Why did it sort of go away?
And it's sort of gone away because back in 2010, the House Republicans, who were in control at that point, argued that this was a monumental waste of government money, and that, in fact, we were maybe spending as much as $16 billion a year simply on earmarks that would run into the thousands in number. And so they created a rule that said that we're not going to be doing this any longer, that Congress was not going to be including these earmarks. Of course, that hasn't made them go away completely. It's shut them down largely, but not completely. There are pieces of legislation that creep through, and there are bits that are attached to that. The annual defense authorization bill contains lots of different kinds of earmarks for different kinds of programs. And what's about to happen in the debate over the president's infrastructure plan is going to be seeing lots and lots of these things, with everything from, say, a $10 billion tunnel project in New York City or a several billion-dollar project out in the middle of Ohio, all in an effort to try to win the votes that it will take to be able to get the program passed.
Talking to Don Kettle from the University of Texas at Austin, looking at earmarks, a.k.a. pork barrel spending. If you don't like it, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like the idea that we should get rid of some or all of these designated spending lines in government, federal government budgets? Do you think they lead to, in effect, a kind of corruption? Or would you welcome seeing them back? Do you think they could help generate some form of congressional compromise? And let's get to that issue, Don. You write about this in Governing Magazine, a piece that I think just hit the presses, well, the web presses today. How could bringing back earmarks more fully help with overcome this resistance to compromise in Congress?
One of the big problems that we've got is that the polarization on Capitol Hill has made it hard to get almost anything passed. And so at least half seriously, I make the argument that maybe we'd be a whole lot better off if we brought the pork back, if we brought back pork barrel politics and earmarks, because we could at least find ways of making the deals that are going to get things done. And if as long as we made them transparent, we'd be essentially institutionalizing something that's going to happen anyway. In particular for this infrastructure plan, which is still bouncing around, it's going to be somewhere well north of $2 trillion in what the administration wants to get through. If you're a fan of that program, the Democrats can afford to lose only 3 votes in the House, just 3, and no votes at all in the Senate. So the question is going to be, what's going to keep the bare majorities together to be able to pass this legislation? And the answer undoubtedly is going to be earmarks for particular projects in particular districts. If there's a senator or a member of House on the fence, what is it going to take to be able to get them to sign on board? The other thing, too, is that bridges, highways, roads, tunnels are projects that every member of Congress, every senator, every member of the House has in their own districts as well. And so a possible way of trying to find ways of building a majority that doesn't require a single party to stand together, but maybe perhaps creates an opportunity for more bipartisan action, could be greased a bit by these earmarks. Is it going to cost some money? Sure, it's going to cost billions. But when we're talking about projects and programs that can cost in the trillions, it may be a small price to pay for actually getting things done.
I want to talk about this kind of in practice. So, you know, if I'm trying to get a bill passed, maybe I'm in a party with a narrow majority, and I go to somebody else in the other party and say, hey, I want you to vote with us. I know it might tick off your colleagues on your side of the aisle. Some of your core supporters in your district might not go along with it. But under the current system, in exchange, I can offer you absolutely nothing. I have no, there's no incentive I can offer you to take those risks. Do you think that that bringing back earmarks can overcome that that lack of incentive?
Well, I think so. If you think about this, there are 2 different ways at this point of getting things passed. One is the kind of threat that goes on where Republicans say, if you vote with the Democrats, we'll cut you off. And on top of that, we'll raise money to get a primary challenger against you. And somebody who has to go back to the district to run is going to be in a tough situation. Or alternatively, you can imagine a member of Congress who says that, you know, I don't really need your opposition. I can try to deal with that and win with support because I'm bringing back this new project that people in my district have been waiting for the last 5 years. And I'm going to be out there with a ribbon cutting and tell everybody that I'm the one who's bringing value back to all of you taxpayers. And so it provides a way of creating the opportunities for a majority that are something other than the heavy hand of the majority leader who can sit there and engage in the kind of threats that we've seen lately. And actually, we've seen it on both sides by Democrats and Republicans. So there's reason for hoping that we might be able to find a way to use that to find ways of getting things passed that otherwise might just end up sitting on the shelf and perhaps make Congress functional again.
On the other hand, I mean, there is the concern, and the reason that people made fun of these things and mocked them and got rid of them in large part, it feels a little corrupt-ish. You know, it's not like straight-up corruption where you're bribing somebody, but you are kind of buying their vote. Is it worth holding our nose a little bit and knowing that, yeah, some of that's going to happen?
First, it's going to happen anyway. Second, in a lot of ways, we as taxpayers expect it to happen. I mean, nobody sends a member of Congress to Washington with the hope that what they're going to do is make sure that all the money that gets spent in somebody else's congressional district. All of us expect that a member of Congress is going to be looking out for us and our interests. And it happens not only just, of course, on roads and bridges and other projects like that, although they are the most famous examples, but think about whatever it is that you care about. If you elect somebody to go to Congress who is going to be working on issues ranging from women's rights to foreign aid to issues in foreign policy, you would expect there to be horse trading to be able to get anything passed. And so we're always dealing with, I'll give you a little bit of that in exchange for a little bit of this. And so the question is, what's it going to take to get Congress functional again? So it does have this kind of stink of corruption sometimes about it when viewed from the outside, but it never looks very corrupt when it's the road that you've been waiting for a long time that saves you 20 minutes on your road into work, or that bridge that otherwise would be falling apart that allows you to be able to take your kids to school. So when that happens, that sure doesn't seem very much like corruption to the people who benefit from it.
We're talking to Don Kettle from the University of Texas Austin about earmarks for infrastructure projects or other projects and how they can maybe help solve gridlock in Congress, maybe along the lines of this new infrastructure proposal. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how pork was used in the past, how earmarks were used in the past, how they could help now? Do you think that, it is inherently corrupt? Let's this idea, okay, hey, you, if you vote for this infrastructure project, we'll give you a little something. We'll make sure we've got money designated for your bridge or museum or whatever it might be. Is that okay? Do you think it's an all right way to run Congress? Do you think it might make Congress work better? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about earmarks with Professor Don Kettle from the University of Texas, Austin. He says maybe bringing earmarks back, these specially designated funding lines to make sure some of the funding goes into particular congressional districts, could maybe make Congress work a little better, overcome some polarization and gridlock. You can join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. I've been wondering about this a lot. Have you? Is it on your mind? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Don, in that piece in Governing Magazine that you wrote that I mentioned, you point out that lack of gridlock or lack of earmarks isn't the only thing leading to polarization in Congress. What are some of the other things driving that, do you think?
A lot of this has to do, of course, with the role of the media. Republicans tend to listen to Republican outlets and Democrats to Democratic outlets. Rarely does everybody get their news from the same sources. So we have that for sure. We have the rise of special and single interest politics as well, where there are coalitions that gather around particular issues, whether it might be immigration on the one side or a Green New Deal on the other. And so it's become almost an article of faith that you have to oppose one or support the other. So that's another big piece. And then, of course, is the growing power of some of the party leaders in being able to engage in the kind of threats that or support that comes along with their role in Congress, being able to support people for reelection or to organize opposition if it turns out that it looks like they may be getting weak in the knees about supporting the party line. So we have that. And then add one other thing, the fact that the country is just so evenly divided. We rarely have an election where the winner and the loser are separated by more than a few percent of the popular vote. And so it makes it that much easier to make every issue an Armageddon-like issue, because any issue might have the risk of being able to tilt the race in another direction. So we've seen all kinds of things like that. There are lots of other things going on. But the real question is, what can we try to do to make Congress in particular functional again?
Yeah, I think about that. You know, here in Wisconsin, we have those tight statewide elections, so many elections for president and governor and some other offices within a percentage point in the vote. And you could say, okay, politicians would look at that and say, wow, you know, half of people support me, half of people support the other side. We should come together in the middle and find ways to make everybody a little bit happy. You know, a lot of evidence that isn't what's happening. What would it take to incentivize that kind of thinking?
Well, and again, I think the idea of bringing back the pork, even so, it may seem like a sort of a squirrely idea. It's worth thinking about, because if we think about the one thing that we know doesn't work, which is to try to make an appeal to everyone's better nature and say, okay, let's just come together in the middle, split the difference, and we'll all be happier. That's increasingly hard for anybody to be convinced to do. It's just not a strategy that works. But on the other hand, it is the case that legislatures and members of Congress go to the Capitol in an interest to try to not only advocate for and pass good policy, but also they have a political incentive and a responsibility to try to do the best they can for their constituents back home. And so often doing that has to do with dealing with the things that people really care about. People hate having their tires get flat in potholes. They hate having to drive the long way around a bridge that's broken down. They hate having roads that are in disrepair. They hate having mass transit systems that don't work well. And so the idea of, you know, we could build a broader coalition if you get a little bit of something that is really important to you and to your constituents, And we used that as a way to try to build coalitions. And there was a lot of that back in the good old days. And it's from Jefferson's days, as I pointed out, the kind of thing that's attracted a lot of political opposition. But it also provides sometimes some of the grease for the wheels that makes politics work.
Weird from Kathy in Rhinelander, who says, I feel like politicians represent their parties and their donors much more than their constituents now. And Kathy goes on, it makes them unresponsive to everyday people and slows up government. What do you think, Don?
Yeah, I think there is something to that, that the idea that people have to march in line, Republicans say behind Fox and Democrats behind CNN, and that you have this kind of party orthodoxy, it, I think, disconnects people from the actual needs of individual citizens. And one of the advantages of good old pork barrel politics and earmarks is that a member of Congress, if he or she has the power to be able to make decisions and to be able to make bargains that, in fact, benefit people back home, there's going to be a lot more pressure, a lot more incentive for doing just that. And it's going to force individual members of Congress and state legislators, I think, to pay much more attention to the needs of their constituency. You can't take broad principled positions or ideological lines and ignore your constituents if it turns out that, well, wait a minute, over there in that next state, they got this new highway, they got the new bridge, they're getting jobs that we're not getting. Maybe we got to get somebody in there the next time who can manage to do that for us.
Talking to Don Kettle from the University of Texas Austin about the idea of bringing back earmarks, often mocked as pork barrel spending back in the day, off the table in some ways lately, but it might make a comeback. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Don, I've seen some comments, and I think this includes Maine Senator Republican Susan Collins saying, okay, maybe if we do this, we can bring it back, but do it in a more ethical way. I've seen some people say, okay, make sure that the member of Congress who inserted this thing, their name's on it, so it doesn't feel like a sneaky backroom deal. Is there a cleaner way to do this that might take some of the, I don't know, bad taste out of people's mouths about earmarks?
Yeah, I think there are two things. One is, in fact, it's transparency in two respects. The first respect would be, in fact, to identify the name of the person who's responsible for it. Although, if it turns out that it is, say, a highway in a particular district in central Pennsylvania, everybody always knew that it was Bud Schuster from the Altoona area who is responsible for that. So it's that's
wasn't it
clear.
Actually named after him? I mean, that was kind of a giveaway.
There's a Bud Schuster Highway, so it became clear after the fact that it was pretty obvious who was responsible for that. So the people rarely make big bargains for somebody else's district. So it's possible to be able to tell that. And the other thing is to be transparent about the amount of money that's involved. So at least we know that if there is a highway and it's a $1.5 million plan, that we know who's responsible and how much money it's costing. So transparency, I think, is the great sanitizer in all these issues. And if it's clear what the bargains are and what things are going to be, why they're being made, then it becomes a lot easier to understand and to remove the sense that there's some kind of under the table bargaining going on. Because one thing we want to be careful about is that there may be, for example, a contractor who stands to benefit from a new project and slides a little bit of campaign contribution in return for a member of Congress's support for a new project. And that's the kind of thing that we want to be careful about. But the transparency and disclosure is the way to try to avoid that kind of problem, I think.
Let's bring on a caller now. Don is with us in La Crosse. Don, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to bring up, Don?
Hello, I think that earmarks is one leg of the problem. I think the second leg of that problem is the fairness doctrine. When they let Fox and MSNBC broadcast without any contradiction. And the second leg is the Hatch Act, where they decided you don't pass anything unless you pass it in your caucus. It wasn't the Hatch Act. It was Hastert.
Hastert rule. Don, thanks a lot for the call. What do you think, other Don? Don Kettle.
I always have to express appreciation to a Don, because we've got to stick together. But I think that there's something to that. There's a whole combination of things. The fairness doctrine, I think, is something that has faded away as people have paid more and more attention to the kinds of media outlets that support and reinforce their own views. And that's getting harder to try to deal with. But there's no getting away from the fact that Congress in particular has a whole series of rules that are making it harder to try to get things done. They're designed especially to try to reinforce the power of the leaders, Democrats and Republicans alike. Mitch McConnell has said that if the Democrats were to try to remove the filibuster, for example, he will use a whole collection of powers and strategies that will just simply curl their hair and turn Congress into an ash heap. It's possible to do that because of the power of leaders. And while it's unquestionably the case that we need strong leaders, what we've got is a point where the individual members have lost some of their power and their ability to be able in the process to connect with their individual constituents back home. And that, I think, is a growing problem. It's the sense that the people either are in business for themselves or certainly not in, in business for them back home. And that's something we need to restore.
And briefly, Don, I think members of Congress, there's a lot of frustration in the public over polarization and gridlock, but a lot of pressure from part of the public to not compromise with the other side. Is that the same public?
Yeah, it's the same public. And one of the things is it's part of the old story that, boy, we hate Congress as a whole, but we tend to love our own individual member. And we have a really difficult time in trying to find ways of making those kind of connections. The public, we're not a very easy people to govern. And we have lots of internal divisions that make it hard to develop the kind of compromises that are necessary. But compromise is necessary. There's no getting around the fact that it's impossible for any side to be able to get all of what it is that it wants. So the question is, how can we get to yes on the things that matter? What can we do to try to make sure that we can connect members of Congress and members of state legislatures back to their individual constituents? And I think it's worth at least understanding that that's the basic problem that we need to solve. And the possibility that we can at least consider the possibility that these earmarks might provide a mechanism for making that happen.
Don, thanks again for joining us today.
So it's good to be with you, Rob, and with all my friends in Wisconsin.
That's Don Kettle, Sid Richardson, professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. Back in the day, formerly with UW-Madison, we talked about some of the past, present, and future of congressionally directed spending, or earmarks.